January 18, 2022. It's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Do you remember Third Stream Music? What was called Third Stream Music?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever want to feel much of an inner urge to play that kind of music?
No.
Why do you think it didn't catch on with the musicians? Is there anything about it that suggests why it was never very popular with them?
Well, I don't know. Well, it was an attempt. It was an attempt to create something, I think, with more of a label, you see, than through evolution.
You mean it didn't evolve naturally out of the desires of the musicians?
I don't think so. Well, maybe it did. I can't say that. It was an attempt to do something, which is that the evolution is about trying to, you know. But there's something in evolution that, man, it just happens when it's ready. You know, although you have to try also. And this just seemed, it wasn't really where it was coming from, you know. It was an attempt to blend, to wed the two musics, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it really was.
I suppose that's what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
You said that, talking about saxophone players, there was a common pool that everybody dipped into. Maybe here there wasn't enough of that pool, I mean, for people to dip into.
Well, I just think it wasn't time. It was an attempt to do something at a time when it just wasn't time for this to happen. And therefore, it wasn't lasting. But there may have been some things that came out of this that have been beneficial in promoting the final change, which is coming. See? So nothing is really wasted, although it might appear to fail or not succeeded, you know, the way that men felt they would have decided to. But
even the mistakes can be instructive if you know how to utilize them.
Show, happy Tuesday. Start off the show, John Coltrane talked to Frank Kosky, November 66, about third stream music and how he never got into that. But, you know, he tells you why. And then Grant Curry, I'm Needy. But speaking of which, because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me Grant Curry. Welcome aboard, Brother Grant.
Outstanding, Watt. Great to be with you.
Right, bass brother. Do you remember you were working with James Hall, right?
Last time I saw you, I was.
That's right. That was a little bit ago.
that was a little bit ago, yeah.
Oh, wow. So it's a big honor to have you on the show, and we got to thank Howard Wolfen for the connect.
Indeed, indeed. Good man, Howard.
Beautiful man. Brother Grant, I'm very curious about your journey in music, so please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Well, shit, my earliest recollection would probably be, just being a kid, man, So I was born in Virginia. My dad was in the Navy. Yeah, you know a little bit about that.
A little bit.
And then we moved to Hawaii for a while, and then we ended up in upstate New York for a few years, Rochester, and I guess it was there that both my musical journey started, my life with diabetes started there, my life with drug addiction started there, and just a whole bunch of stuff, you know. And so,
well, let's get into the good stuff, like the music.
Well, the good stuff, man. Yeah, and then by the time I hit my teens, we left there and we landed in Slidell, Louisiana.
Wow.
And that's really where I kind of consider myself from, the Southeast Louisiana, you know, and
I just had somebody on the show, Lily Lewis. She's living there now. And I know about I-12 shortcut. If you don't want to go through New Orleans, right?
That's right.
The other side, north of Lake Pontchartrain there.
That's right. Stay north of the lake.
That's right. So can you bring your earliest musical recollection then? Is it Rochester or is it Slidell?
I think it's probably Rochester, man. Sitting around in a lot of pain about just being alive and being confused and being sick and not understanding, and listening to the Beatles.
Ah.
And having that stuff really touch me, you know, in a very deep place, and particularly all the John Lennon stuff.
Sure. And the bass man, Paul McCartney, right? Well, at first it was John Lennon's friend, right? And that guy quit. And then Paul quit.
Yeah, and you know, I've never really been like a big McCartney fan, okay? I mean, look, Paul McCartney's great, all right? So I'm not looking to start any fights. But he was just never really my influence, you know? It was always Lennon. And, I mean, I did always tune into the bass, you know? But you know, from early on, I started on guitar when I was like 11 years old, okay?
Yeah.
And
what was there one in the pad where you grew up?
Yeah, I had. Well, I bought. I had an acoustic guitar.
Okay.
And that's what I thought. I thought I wanted to be a guitar player. And so, you know, I worked with that a bit. And then I remember going to, you know, summer camp as a kid. I went to a camp for boys with diabetes. All right.
Yeah.
And this place was like Mecca. And it was Camp Joslin in Massachusetts, and it was part of the Joslin Diabetes Center. And I had this counselor, Ben Jacobson, and he was a guitar player. He has a guitar at camp, and he had this black Ampeg stud, okay? And the Ampeg stud series, they were only made in 1973 and 74, and this thing was like an SG copy looking thing. And although it just didn't really sound exactly like an SG. This thing was plywood, man. It was like 30 ply. And so anyways, I just thought Ben was the coolest. And I loved his guitar. And I'll never forget, like, the next winter. And those experiences, they impacted my life.
Sure.
In such a heavy way, right?
Right.
And anyways, like the next winter, I was looking around to buy an electric guitar, and I found in the paper, in the want ads, you know, you remember that? The fucking old school. Like,
yeah.
Looking through the want ads. It's shit. You know, you didn't have, like, the eBay and the online stuff. You had to look through the paper.
Sure.
And I saw an ad for an Ampeg stud, and I freaked out. It was $150. And $150 is what I had saved up. That's all I had at the point. And I'm like, Dad, I got to see this guitar. Can you please take me? And so he drove me one evening after he got off of work. And we went to this dude's apartment to go check this guitar out. And he had, sure enough, a black Ampeg stud. The exact same one that Ben Jacobson had.
Whoa.
And I just completely lost it, man. I'm like, I got to have this thing. So I bought it. I paid him asking price for it. And on the way home, you know, I didn't have anything to play it through. And on the way home, my dad took me to a music store. And they were only open for another 15 minutes. And we went in and had all these beautiful amps in there. I don't remember what, but real expensive stuff. And I couldn't afford any of it. But there was this one amp. A little practice amp, a little 5-watt practice amp, and it was the brand was Zapp, Z-A-P-P, okay? and my dad, it was $60, and my dad, being really cool in that moment, he said, "I'll take care of it.
Whoa!
You can, I'll pay for part of it, and you can owe me, you know, whatever." And so he bought the Zapp amp for me for $60, took it home, man, and I plugged that guitar in. Didn't even have all his strings on. I had a couple strings broken off. And I played the shit out of it in the back den for my parents, and it was probably just nothing but racket. And I was so happy, man.
Speaking of money, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Man, I love that question. You know what? It was Yes, Fragile.
Whoa. A lot of notes.
Yeah.
A big bass.
Yeah, man.
I found out later, the bass, Chris Squire, it was his band.
Yep.
Whoa.
That's it.
In fact, Rick Wakeman was supposed to be the piano player for the Spiders from Mars, but Chris Squire said, "I'll pay you more." And now, what was the first gig you saw, Grant?
Yeah.
Little factoid there.
You know, I think the first gig that I ever saw was when the Beatlemania production was touring in the 70s, the late 70s.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I saw that.
Whoa. And what about at school? Were you in the marching band, or were you just home alone with that guitar?
I was mostly home alone with the guitar, but I did play in the jazz ensemble for a short time. But I couldn't play half of the shit. I mean, you know, like the chord structures or this jazz stuff that we were doing, I couldn't wrangle that. And
what instrument? Were you on the guitar?
I was on guitar, and there was another dude there who was playing bass, and he was actually quite good, but he was a way better guitar player than I was. And anyways, I half of the songs, whenever we would do, like, presentations for the school or whatever,
right,
I'd have to just be up there on stage with my volume turned off and looking like I was playing. Just faking it, man. It was pretty pathetic. It was embarrassing.
Look, you gave me this Cops and Criminals song. I want to play
it. Oh, right on.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah! Thank you. Bye. Draw your line. There's no in-between. There's no in-between. There's no in-between. Well, that means a fucking thing.
Pedro, so that chunky music started with Grant Curry doing Cops and Criminals. Then we had the Black Dots out of Denton, Texas. Sinner Man, you do right, right? That's Nina Simone and a can. A little medley of covers there. Kush Aora times Origin times Titus 12 with Magma Pulse. This is some clips from some stuff they got coming out. The Hellbeens out of England, brand new China Latest. Helvetia from their new album, Better Get Gifted. Brand new from Northern Jaw here in Strong Beach. Prelude, The Lost Art of Patience, is the first part of a big opera from Michael. And then Grant Curry, People. Okay, let's pick up.
Yeah.
So you're miming it at the gigs.
Yeah,
how do you get that? What's the connect with the bass, Brother Grant?
Okay, so not long after that, I landed in a drug treatment center, okay? And so you gotta understand, I had a lot of problems when I was young, and a lot of like emotional problems, and then I started taking drugs and drinking, and that became its own problem. And you know, like life was fucking hard, and I was trying to trying to deal with it. I was trying to deal with the reality of, you know, being told that I wasn't going to live very long, you know?
Yeah.
And, cause that's what the reality was back then in the '70s with living. And so anyways, I was really a mess. Okay. And so I ended up at this drug treatment center. I was running away from home, one night from Slidell, and I had two friends from school that were, you know, they were also a mess, and I was going with them. And so anyways, my parents somehow found out and they intercepted. And I was institutionalized for about a year, okay?
Okay.
And that all sucked, you know.
Of course.
But you know, there was a lot of positive things that came out of that, and
might have saved your life, right?
That I actually, what's that?
Might have saved your life.
Well, it did save my life, and I was in fact very sick at the time because I didn't take care of myself.
Right.
And so, so I got clean, man. I got off the drugs and I stopped drinking. And, just as a side note, I just now I'm coming up on 40 years of being clean.
Yeah.
And so anyways, I get clean. I'm in like a halfway house forever. And then eventually I come home and I started going to like local AA meetings and NA meetings. And I met these guys that were, you're going to like this too. They were like, these guys were former sailors. They were Navy guys.
Okay.
That somehow they had been stationed out in like San Diego together and they had all been junkies. And so they ended up in Slidell somehow and they started a band and they were several years older than me. One day they're having band rehearsal over at Bob's, trailer. He lived in a mobile home. And they called me up and they're like, because they knew I was a guitar player. And, hey, Grant, man, you think he'd come over and sit in on bass today? Our bass player can't make it. I'm like, yeah, yeah. So I go over and they hooked me up with a bass and I fucking loved it.
Now, you'd never been on a bass before that, right?
No. And it spoke to me. It spoke to me so deeply. And from that point on, I just knew this is my instrument. And, you know, I was an okay guitar player, and I suppose today I'm still an okay guitar player, but it just never spoke to me.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't really speak to me. And I can write on a guitar, that's fine, but as like a real expression, it was the bass. And I had also played cello when I was like real young, but I didn't stick with that because I had an impatient teacher. And he was just grumpy and it wasn't fun, you know? But, so anyways, I then eventually, like, I don't know, I think I was playing in another, like, you know, like recovery cover band. Okay.
Okay.
Did that for a bit. And then when I was like late teens, early 20s, I worked in a treatment center, you know, I was like a counselor and on the side playing in this, like, you know, cover band. And that was fun, but I just wasn't really into the whole cover thing. And meanwhile, I'm at home and I'm listening to, you know, I'm listening to Gang of Four. I'm listening to
Dave Allen, right?
Minuteman.
Dave Allen on the bass.
Yeah, Dave Allen, man.
Some good, stuff. Oh man.
I was heavy into Minutemen at the time. I was heavy into Fire.
I heard of those guys.
Yeah, you did.
So can I ask you about the bass? So you didn't have anybody teaching. You were learning by listening to other cats?
Yeah. And I spent a lot of time. I had this B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland record, Live at the Coconut Grove.
Sure.
And I listened to that record a lot, and I played along to that. And that taught me a lot. And I also listened a lot to the Clash first record.
Bobby Blue Bland. I can't remember the guy on the bass here. But you know, of that style of bass playing, there was a guy in Austin, right? Keith Ferguson?
Okay.
Fabulous Thunderbirds, Tailgaters. Man, was he good. He was so good. That kind of greasy. R&B kind of bass. I mean, I think Junk killed him sooner or later. But
yeah.
He was a great, great player. So one good thing about being in the cover band, though, you got to hear a lot of different ways bass guys were taking songs, right? You know, dealing with songs.
Yeah.
Right? By learning other people's songs, right? You were learning different approaches. Right. I was going to say some James Jamerson.
Yeah.
When I met you, you were playing with James Hall, and man, if he did not sing like Richard Hell, who was a big bass man, he's my first punk rock hero, right? And he was a bass man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, I think James told me he was from Bowling Green.
That's right.
Right, Western Kentucky. And Richard Hell is actually from Lexington, you know, the big town in the middle. But
yeah.
Okay. Okay, so, I mean, you know, yeah, who wants to be in a cover band, right? But at least you got to check out what other cats were doing on the bass, you know, since you didn't have, like, a mentor.
Yeah, and I got to play.
Yeah, yeah, that too. You worked the fingers. Oh, you didn't tell me what kind of bass.
Yep. Well, I had to borrow for quite a while. So I remember, like, borrowing a dude's Yamaha, like, P-bass, copy kind of thing. But then eventually, let's say I put some scratch together and I bought myself a white Japanese Fender Jazz.
Okay.
And I loved that instrument. That was a great instrument.
What about amplifier, Grant?
I think at the time I bought like a 410 TV cabinet that was a pretty loud cab, and then like maybe some, like, they got a Fender solid state head that was pretty loud also.
Okay.
And I was playing over at my buddy Bob's house, the same Bob, who I had sat in with years ago.
Wow.
And we started a band called the Kabilskis, and we were like, writing our own stuff along with doing some like.
That's, you know, the antidote for the cover band itis.
Yeah.
That's it. Brother Grant, we're at the end of the first hour. January 18, 2022.
Hey, I'm going to tell my
dog. This is your wife, Peter, your special guest, Grant Curry. Hold tight for hour two. January 18, 2022. It's the second hour of the Watch for Pedro show.
just getting harder. It's so fucking hard. We'll be right back.
bedtime song.
Watt from Pedro Show started up the second hour off with Grant Curry doing Primal. And then we had Paranoid State, brand new from Holland with Force Field. Bombas Prendon, this is brand new. D.C. area, Garbage Train. Sam Locke Ward, Bob Bucko Jr. with Best in Show, Dubuque and Iowa City, Iowa, both those cats. Mellow Main, Lives, Complicated Melody, and finally Silence from Grant Curry. So your buddy Bob, you're still with him. Now you're making a band. He turns you on to bass. You're on the bass, and now you guys are writing your own tune.
Yeah, we're writing our own tunes.
And you got a band called the Kabilskis.
That's right. We got a band called the Kabilskis, named after this family that he grew up with that he knew in Pittsburgh when he was younger. And then...
Which makes sense. Big Polish neighborhood in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Andy Warhol.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. And unfortunately, Bob lost his son when he was 8 years old, and I was very close with his boy Bobby. And Bobby got involved in an accident at a construction site and died from a head injury. And that was a really heavy time for Bob and for me. And Bob had these twin daughters too, Rachel and Rochelle, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful young girls. And I don't know, man. There's something about that time that I think really shaped me as to, like, you know, who I was going to be as an adult. And I think ultimately also who I was going to be as a musician. And I don't know, man. I think it threw me into life deeper with a deeper determination of sorts. And Bob and I kept playing together as long as we could. But then I eventually moved to Slidell, Louisiana, and he was still there. He's actually still there, and he's doing great. And I moved into New Orleans, and that's when I hooked up and I found James.
Oh, yeah, right. That's now I remember.
Yeah, and I found Lynn, you know, who was our guitar player, and Sterling, our drummer. And I fell in with those guys and really connected with what they were doing musically, you know. I mean, I just so deeply identified with them. When I first saw them, I thought, man, I got to be a part of it.
What was the pad before it was called One Eye Jack's? Shim Sham.
Shim Sham.
Right, in French Quarter, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I fell in with them, and we were doing this, like, weirdo kind of, I don't know, man, Velvet Underground meets...
Voidoids. It kind of reminded me of Richard Hell and Voidoids.
Yeah,
was a great band, man. I remember seeing you guys. You guys floored me.
It was intense, man. And I remember playing with you when you were with Pornos.
Yep. Howlin' Wolf.
No, it was actually... It was at the Masquerade in Atlanta.
Oh, Atlanta. Okay, yeah. Kind of like a Hollywood-looking place, all painted black.
Yeah, and real big room.
Right.
And,
but in New Orleans, we played Howlin' Wolf, which was terrible sounding, like a warehouse pad.
Yeah, yep.
Well, Masquerade didn't have that good a sound either.
Nah, sure didn't. But, yeah, we played gig together, and then we played a few weeks later together at the Eden Festival, at the Mossport Raceway in
Ontario. That's right, Eden Festival, absolute.
Yeah, and I'll never forget, man, when we had just arrived at the festival site, and we're kind of hanging out behind the main stage, and you came charging up, and you know you were flying your flannel, you were in your Converse, and. You just came up to me, man. You just grabbed me. You lifted me up, gave me a big old bear hug. And you just said, bass. and then you were telling me, it's like, yeah, man, I got to go get into my monkey suit. You know, like they're making me wear these rags and whatever.
Outfit.
Yeah. And, but you guys played a great set there, man.
Oh, I love those guys. They're beautiful cats.
Fantastic, man. And Perry was at the top of his game.
Oh, yeah. Perk and Peter and, beautiful guys.
Yeah, Peter. And then, I think we played the next day. But anyways, and then I think you and I hooked up a couple times more over the years, like maybe played a gig. I think we played a gig one time out in Orange County when you had Nels playing with you.
That's right, Black Gang.
Yeah.
Yep, doing my first opera. Look, you gave me this, the album version of Roll Around. I want to play it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Let me play it there.
Yeah.
and suicide, but I can't run and hide from the way I've been hurt. The day turns to midnight, I'll cast off my tears in a crowd.
Walk for Pedro show. I'm learning some secrets off air, people. That was Grant Curry starting that chunk of music off with the album version of Roll Around. And then Hat Picciotto out of Berlin with Meteor's Rain from their new album, Head Cut, brand new Heart Niagara, or like my Italian buddies call it, Niagara. That's near Rochester. Buffalo, really. XX20, right? And then finally, Grant Curry with 6-6. You, me, and everyone else. You got to tell me about this, some of the songs.
Well, that we're what do you want to know?
Well, like these songs that you call Grant Curry. Under your own name.
You mean like Roll Around?
Like Roll Around, like...
All right, well, look, Roll Around was...
Silence, like Primal, yeah. Like People, like Cops and
okay,
Criminals.
Okay, Roll Around was Club. That was a James Hall solo thing that we had.
Oh, Pleasure Club.
And, yeah, and we did really well with that, actually, for about 5 years. And unfortunately, we were just kind of like fucked up as a unit together, and we couldn't keep together. Because we were actually, like, really starting to pull people, and we were starting to make a living. And it was a drag that we split up. But we did, and then I was producing music in my studio outside of New Orleans for a few years and just, like, making underground and indie albums at my Bayouside studio. And then eventually after the storm, I had to leave. I had to move inland.
We're talking Katrina, right?
Yeah, and I came here to Atlanta, and life kind of fell apart for a while, and then things came together, and I eventually got a studio here in Atlanta, and then I started, like, putting some song ideas together, and that's where songs like Primal come from.
Okay.
And that stuff, which is all called Flood Twin.
That's right. That's the name of the project. Yeah.
So Flood Twin... I ended up teaming up with this dude, J. Leslie Hedberg, who's just a dynamite guitar player. He's got equal parts, Roland Howard. He's got some Richard Lloyd in him.
Roland Howard was something else, man. I got to see the birthday. They played Hollywood once at the Roxy.
Yeah.
And I got to see him. And the skinniest legs, like pipe cleaner, but man, and the treble, he was up there with D Boom with the high end. Whoa. But he was great.
I wish I could have seen him.
Drenched the reverb, right? He's got like the Fender Twin all the way reverbed up.
All the way verbed up.
And it started with the Stooges song, Loose.
Oh. Yeah.
But like Birthday Party version, Loose.
Yeah, I love
Trace,
that.
Tracy Q on the bass, right? Leather chaps and a cowboy hat. And he was grinding it.
Incredible.
Oh, yeah. Great
incredible.
Bass, yeah.
Certainly an influence of mine.
Yeah. And, you know, he had one of those old acoustic 70s acoustic amps, and I could see the EQ. And he had it really cut deep around 300-400 hertz. But the bass way up high, the treble way up high, but then a big old notch in the low mid.
Lots of 60, lots of 100.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
man.
He was just grinding his hips like, you know, John Holmes.
Well, I hope that I can grind my hips even just half as much as he could, you know. But
you know who took after him a lot was Mr. David Sims from Jesus Lizard. He's a big student of Tracy Pugh.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I got to say, David Sims, like, he also found his own thing, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying he was in that classroom.
Yeah, dynamite. I started, like, writing the Flood Twin stuff, and then I teamed up with J. Leslie Hedberg, and we just had this really incredible kind of chemistry together, and then we knew we needed to get a drummer. We got Sterling involved, who, you know, had played with me back in the day with James.
Right.
And Sterling had actually gone into seclusion for years and years and years. And it wasn't until Flood Twin that he actually came out, and he loved what we were doing. He identified with it, and I mean, not only did he like work out as a drummer, he connected with it in such a deep way, and he plays really well with Jay. Certainly plays well with me as a rhythm section. And those two guys are really something.
So you got a power trio.
I got a power trio, and man, is it powerful! And it's dark. It's dark, and it's beautiful, man. And I'm singing in it too, which is a new thing for me. But I had all these things that I wanted to say, and I've needed to say, and so it just made sense. And I do more of a speak sing thing.
That's all right. It's your turn, Brother Grant. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, January 18, 2022, Dishwap Peter's special guest, Grant Curry, hold tight for hour three. September 18, 2022, it's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro show.
this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed.
We could be king.
Called Ballroom Dance is Dead. That's the name of the project.
Yeah.
And we did a cover of India.
We're talking about like Live at the Village Vanguard.
Yeah.
When Eric Dolphy's sitting in with the John Coltrane Quartet.
You have got to hear the Ballroom Dance is Dead version of India.
Whoa, I'd love to. I'd love to. You didn't flow it to me, though, so you got to do that. Tell me. Promise me, please.
Yeah.
Let's tell the people. We heard India from Grant Curry. Then Marion Ramsey with King for a Day. And finally, well, Grant Curry with In Memorandum.
Oh.
King for the Day, that's for Dr. King yesterday. And I was thinking of John Coltrane's Reverend King, but couldn't find it in time.
Thank you for playing In Memorandum. That's a beautiful song, and I'm very proud of that. I did that with James Salter several years ago.
Yeah. Tell me about that too.
Yeah, great guy. He's a guy from Backwater, Georgia, originally, and we connected up during the James Hall years and became friends, and then we connected later and started making some music together, and we did it all on bass. I was playing 4-string and he was playing a 6-string Fender bass.
Yeah.
And that whole album is all bass, and just beautiful instrumental stuff. He's more of a producer than he produces more than he plays, but he's a great player, and he's also a beautiful horn player. That's him playing sax on that song. And in fact, on the rest of that album, which we titled XP Lines,
yeah.
We did have a little guitar, and that was Daniel Ash from Bauhaus.
Whoa, yeah, sure. Also Lovin' Rockets with his brother, right?
Yes, indeed.
I know those cats because the porno guys
yep.
knew them. Yeah.
Yeah, good guy.
Now, what's James doing these days?
James? Well, he's actually been living in the Atlanta area himself.
Okay.
Since after the storm, and because their home flooded out really badly, and they came up this way, and he's just been doing some side band stuff and some solo stuff, and he's still making records.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I always thought he was something, and I loved you guys' band, and it's something else. But, okay. Damascus. What record is this from?
Damascus. That is from Ballroom Dance.
Okay. Let's listen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Scott for Pedro Show. Started the last music of this edition. That chunk, Grant Curry with Damask, and Ray Shin with Don't Try. It's the name of Charles Bukowski. Oh, he's buried here in Pedro. He lived his last 14 years. That's what it says on his gravestone. New woman.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, that's why I wanted you on the show. I wanted to enlighten you with that, Brother Grant.
Yeah, you're
people
right.
Die, that's what they do from New Woman. That was from their first record. Then the Ratchet Orchestra out of Montreal with Dusty, live in 2011. And finally, James Hall doing a cover of The Stooges' Dirt.
Oh.
I found this on YouTube.com.
Wow, yeah. We dug in for that one.
You got righteous bass line, Dave Alexander.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Man, you know, that David Michael Alexander was his name, and my name's Michael David Watt. It was 125 months I got to help those cats out. I remember the first time I did it with those guys. It was the Coachella.
Yeah, I remember when you did that. It was beautiful, man. It was beautiful.
I thought it was going to be one gig, right? Coachella. It ended up being 125 months worth. But I remember we're playing it, and Ig stops us. And he goes up to me. He goes, are we in the right key? And I said, yeah, because the wind was blowing real hard, right? It's out in the polo grounds in the desert. I said, yeah, we're in the right key. He said, start it again. Okay. I couldn't believe it was happening, you know. I could not believe it was that the Stooges were happening and somehow I was helping.
Yeah, man, you were indeed.
So right now, what you got going in your studio, you bring people in there or a lot of it's your own stuff?
Yeah, and not a lot. I mean, I'm pretty selective. You know, I'm not like trying to sell myself too hard out there as a producer or engineer. I mean, if I find something cool I want to work on, then I'll try and bring it in. Right now, actually, I just got asked to produce a Sugartooth record. And I don't know if you remember them from the 90s.
Sure.
They were a heavy band, heavy band from L.A. And they with Joey Castillo playing drum.
Okay, yeah.
They have asked me, they're doing their first record in 25 years, and they've asked me to produce it. I'm thrilled about it, absolutely thrilled about it. They're great guys, and the material is super cool. So I'll be going up to New York City probably in a few weeks, and we're going to track, and then I'll mix the record down here in Atlanta.
And what do you call your plan, your studio?
I don't know that I have a name for it, Mike. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right.
I called my studio when I had my studio in Louisiana, I called it Music for Chameleons.
Yeah.
And I think now I just call it Studio G at Madison Records.
Okay. So they're going to track it. Now, did they send you demos so you know what the stuff's looking?
Yeah, I've been listening to demos.
Right. Yep. And you think that's important? I mean, it's important that people get prepared when they come in the studio, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it depends on the kind of band you are, too. But yeah, I mean, it's benefiting these guys to be prepared. I mean, their stuff their songs have some structure, and they need to know what that is and be as comfortable as they can with it, and so that when they get in the studio, they can just loosen up, you know. So I've been listening to demos with them, and, you know, they've been coming to me and asking me, well, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that?
Well, that's what I'm going to ask you. Your idea of the producer's role in something like this.
Yeah. My idea of the producer's role is to encourage creativity as much as possible, to encourage confidence within the band and among the players, and encourage people to, you know, be their most exciting they can be. And I don't necessarily want to, like, run the show. That's not very interesting to me. I mean, and with a band like this, they're not looking to put together hits. Hey, man, we want to have a hit record. They want to make a satisfying record that makes them happy. So, you know, so I just keep that in mind, you know. And
so what you're telling me is you don't think the producer's role is to pull a gun on the band.
Not this producer. No, man.
You ever hear the story about Johnny Ramone talking about Phil Spector?
Yeah, fucking ridiculous. Man, that guy is fucking crazy. Look, he might have been brilliant in some areas, but he was fucking nuts.
That's right.
Nah, man, I don't want to, being a producer, to me, it's not being a boss of a project.
Look, your best credential is being a bass man in a band, so you understand from the ground level.
Yeah, I think being a bass player and a producer is a really beneficial thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at a guy like Tony Visconti.
Right.
Who was primarily a bass player.
Yeah,
what
right.
He could bring, you know?
Sure. Those Dave Bowie albums. Oh, my God.
They're put together fantastically, you know?
Yeah. And he's still going, right? He's upstate New York.
Yeah. The guy is super talented. He's going.
Yeah, beautiful.
So, I do...
I do that some of the time, Mike. I'm not a full-time producer, but
yeah.
I do it some of the time, and I really enjoy it, and I'm really looking forward to this upcoming project. But I'm also looking forward to maybe trying to get out, like, once we have some break with this fucking COVID, I'd love to get out and do some Flood Twin dates, you know? It's just not right to do it right
sure,
now.
Sure, sure.
So
in the future, some Flood
this
Twin.
Band is,
okay.
This band is on fire. It's the I think it's the best thing I've ever been involved in. I think Flood Twin is the best record I've ever made, and it's real exciting to me. And I really enjoy performing as frontman for the band. And
let me ask you, is Flood Twin recording right now?
We're not recording right now. I do have, so we released the debut record in October.
Oh, shit, just recent. Okay.
Yeah, this past October. We've had a fair amount of underground press on it. It's going to radio this week.
Okay.
And we're hoping to get some, you know, both college play and some specialty commercial play.
Where can people, can I ask you, Grant, where can people find out about Flood Twin on the internet? Is there a website?
Well, go to SoundCloud. We're on SoundCloud. We don't care for Spotify. We do not have our stuff available there. We're at SoundCloud, and you can find us at floodtwin.com.
Okay, floodtwin.com. People.
And we're going to be making another record later this year.
Man, when you do, will you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
I sure will, man. I'd love to.
Because, you know, me and power trios, I'm way into that.
Man, yeah, and I think you could really dig this Flood Twin stuff because, you know, it's power trio, but it's also minimal. It's
That's
really
great.
Minimal.
That's great. You know, I love it. You know, more room in the van.
Lots of bottom coming through, man. Lots of bottom, and I put
the bottom
in there.
So, okay, then we got a date, man. You get that stuff together, come back on the show. It'd be a big
Excellent.
Honor to have you back on board. Yeah, thank you so much. Okay, keep on keeping on, Brother Grant. People, it's been the January 18th, 2022 edition of Watt Pedro, so keep your powder dry.